Founded four centuries ago, Boston has simply never settled. Conversations here determine the future, so let's discover what's next. Join us as we seek out the real Boston, past and present, through stories and perspectives that capture a city always in motion. I'm Martha Sheridan, CEO of Meet Boston, and this is Boston Found.
Hi again, everybody. I'm Mike Orman. Welcome to Prism New England's coverage of the world champion Boston Celtics. Bird inbounds, it comes to Maxwell. Max puts it on the floor. We're down to six. Bird in the corner, double fake, jumper. It's good! Larry Bird hits it with 2 seconds left.
Welcome to Boston Found, the podcast of Meet Boston. I'm your host, Martha Sheridan, and I am delighted to be joined today by the legendary Mike Gorman, the voice of the Celtics. Such a treat. Mike, I'm so happy to have you with us today. I know that this is an important time for you as you wrap up your incredible tenure at the Celtics. Would love to hear a little bit about your journey, how you ended up where you are, and then we'll talk a little bit more specifically about basketball and your thoughts on the city of Boston.
Thanks. It's my pleasure being here, by the way. And you're a fellow Rhode Islander, so we go way back. That's good. That's really I guess you could say I came onto the scene when it was in Rhode Island and Providence. I was fortunate enough to run into Mike Trangisi earlier, who was the sports information director at Providence College, and Dave Gabbett was the coach there. I can remember specifically one night up in Olean, New York, and they had just beaten St. Bonaventure, which is located there, and we were eating in a restaurant, an all-night diner, and Trangisi turns to Dave and he says, "Dave, tell Mike about what you're thinking." And Dave says, "Well, I'm thinking about taking all these schools from the South." He went on for an hour. And the whole Big East Conference was basically in his head at this time. But he had gone to about two or three ACC tournaments down in Raleigh, and he saw the regionalization, how that worked down there. And he thought if he brought it up into New England and New York, he'd get Madison Square Garden, he'd get Boston Garden. He'd put in really big buildings. And God love Dave. He was a visionary. And he was
Little did he know.
So he got that going, and I just kind of held on for dear life right behind him. And one thing led to another. I got games, did a lot of work with the Big East. Terry worked for the Big East. That's one of the places when I first met her. And she was producing the television network. And that one thing led to another. And then I got a phone call one day from the Celtics. And I wanted to know if I'd be interested in coming up and doing games here. And then I came here and eventually let Providence go behind me when the Big East kind of stumbled a little bit. I think they were in the 90s. The Celtics weren't a whole lot better. But they were the Celtics, and I grew up in Dorchester, and so to be the voice of the Celtics, even if they're bad, was okay with me.
I love it. So talk about Dorchester and your Boston roots.
St. Brennan's, you know, if you come from that neighborhood up there, you don't just say you live on Crockett Avenue, you say you went to St. Brennan's or St. Gregory's or St. Matthew's or St. Anne's, all the parishes. That's what I grew up in. It was kind of a very strong Catholic influence. I went to 8 years of school to start off at St. Brendan's School, and then went to Boston Latin School, where my father had gone and my sister had gone, my older brother had gone. So that was a whole tradition thing going there. I still found myself getting out of college, and I still was in the same place. I still was in Boston, mainly because I didn't see any reason to leave. Most of my friends who I grew up with became firemen, became policemen, went to work at the post office, and stayed and had kids now in the neighborhoods that they grew up in. In fact, one of the Wahlbergs bought the house that I grew up in on Crockett Avenue up behind St. Brennan's, and he's been there for a long time. It's one of the younger Wahlbergs, and he's got three or four kids. And every time he does over a room, he'll send me a picture before and after so I can remember what it used to look like. So that's what I grew up in, and it took me going into the Navy and going away for about 5 years to leave it. And then when I came back after that, I decided I didn't really want to pursue the line that a lot of my friends had gone on. So I kind of went off in a different direction, and for better or for worse, landed up here.
I think it worked out just fine. So you have a place in Boston and have for a long time, in addition to another home. But what is it that you and Terry like to do when you're in Boston, places that you like to visit?
Any spend a lot of time on Hanover
shops?
Street.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of time on Hanover Street. I love that. I mean, that's really a flashback to like the Godfather movies and everything. People are just very friendly. They're very open. You go up, when you get off Hanover Street and get on some of those side streets there, you'll find guys, they take their lawn chairs and they put it in the middle of the street, and the four of them sit around and they play cards. And if a car comes, it's too bad for the car. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really like, again, it's like a real flashback. So we spend a lot of time there. And then down on the waterfront has changed so much. I know this isn't a comparison most people would like, but you actually have the feeling you're in New York once you get over the bridge and get down there, because it's 25, 30 stories on either side of you. That's very New Yorkish as opposed to what Boston ever was. It's good to see that because it means a lot of jobs, means a lot of opportunity.
Let's talk a little bit about our favorite team, the Boston Celtics. You've been their voice for four decades now, which is an amazing accomplishment. And you've seen four championship teams, correct?
Yes, I have.
Looking back, what was your favorite season, if you have one, or eras that you...
2007-8, when we won the championship there. Mostly because when we won before, I didn't travel with the team. When I first took the Celtic job, for about the first 10 years, actually, I did the job, I'd do Celtic home games with Tommy. And then when the Celtics went on the road, Tommy would go with Red, and I would go into the Big East. So that was a great time in the 80s I had, where for about 3 months out of the year, I'd do maybe sometimes 7-8 games a week between the Big East and Celtics, just bouncing back and forth. Yeah, 2007, 2008, and the reason that I like them so much is because I did travel with them. And you did find yourself scraping snow off your car at Hanscom Air Force Base at 3 in the morning, and someone who's, you know, you're scraping your car, and you look up, and one of the players is scraping, helping out on the other side. There's a certain bonding that goes on there, which is nice. And I'm still very friendly with Paul Pierce. He's still my favorite Celtic of all time.
I wasn't going to ask you that question, but that's a good one.
I'll give you good reasons when you ask. But yeah, so it was great to travel with them. They had such a chip on their shoulder, and they thought they were the best, and they proved to everybody they were the best. And they came into your gym, and they didn't want to beat you. They wanted to kill you. They wanted to beat you by 30. The guys would tell stories about up 15 with 2 minutes to go, and Garnett would be chewing out guys if he's not playing hard enough and not doing this. And he just ruled the whole team. He was...
Well, now I have to stop you there for 1 minute, because as I watched the games with my husband, who's much more of an expert than I am...
I doubt that.
He talks about how he wishes this team had just a little bit more of that passion that the 2007-8 teams had.
Or this team now.
Yes, this team now. Would you agree with that? Well, just that drive, maybe a little bit more of it?
I'm not going to agree with that because they might hear me.
I shouldn't have even said it, but I got to ask.
No, I know what you're saying. And I do think we just picked up this kid named Tillman, who he's 6'6", 6'7". He's about 240, and he's a legitimate big kid, and he'll bang a little bit. I'm concerned about a little bit of the frailty that we might have along the front line, frailty and age combined. Al has been terrific. Mm-hmm. But can he continue to be terrific when his play gets ratcheted up? Now, he showed last year that he could, and I wouldn't be surprised if he did this year. But he's going to be tested early and often by teams. The fact that Embiid, I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, but the fact that Embiid was out for a while and is now back, the Celtics in the first round, I was talking last night, one of the computer guys, and he said the odds are the Celtics will play the Sixers in the first round. Now, that's tough. Usually, it's somebody you play the whole year to get a break, supposedly. And all of a sudden, you end up playing the MVP of the league, who's a very good player. And the other guys on the Philly team have gotten used to playing without him. Mm-hmm. So now when he comes back, it isn't a negative, it's a positive, because they have confidence. Mm-hmm. Before, they just give the ball to him and get out of the way. Now it's 50-50, mm-hmm. and that makes them very good. We may just have a tough road right from the very beginning. If we can stay healthy, I think we're clearly the favorite, and there's no reason to think we can't win the title. Porzingis has been a wonderful addition to the team, not only just on the court, but off the court. He's been just terrific. He just enjoys playing the game, and he's never played the game in a venue or at a venue that's like the Boston Garden when the Celtics were playing. And I can remember the very first game, exhibition game, we played there at the end. He was positively giddy in the locker room afterwards because he was like, this is what I always dreamed of, being playing in a situation like this. So that's a help to have that enthusiasm there. Now, if we can just bring the toughness, we win it.
Stolen by Bird at half court. Off to McHale. Back to Bird. Larry stops. Jumper. Good! 40 points on the night for Larry Bird.
You've been to many arenas, probably all of them throughout your career. And I'm very passionate about the Garden as a basketball venue, mm-hmm. as I am the Dunkin' Donuts Center, now the AMP in Rhode Island, because the PC fans blow the roof off of that place on many occasions. Talk a little bit about that New England sort of vibe in our arenas and how that can make it a challenge for other teams to play here.
Oh, it's a challenge. No question about that. And it was a challenge. At the beginning, Dave tried to involve as many New England teams as he could. He bought Boston College in. He couldn't get Connecticut in at the very beginning, but he always has eye on Connecticut to bring them in. But he wanted a coverage of the states and the area to get the people in and to have the demographics that he wanted to see. And he was able to get that, and he was able to make a team that would to play in his image. And his image was very much up and down the court. He wanted to run. He wanted to bring Denny Crum and these people in from Louisville and other schools and beat their brains out. Because they'd all take it the first couple of times before they wised up that this little Providence College, little Catholic school, and whatever, how good can they be? And then they show up and Ernie D's out there and Marvin Barnes is out there and players like that are coming along. So that was a lot of fun for me to cover Providence College. And so I would say that, again, that was more a, I'm an adult and they're kids. When you play with the Celtics, I'm not the kid, I'm just a semi-adult with most of these guys.
Got it.
So that's a whole different story, but it was fun because to go back to my point about the 2007-18 was they wanted to beat you by 40. They wanted to come in and send a message out that you shouldn't be on the same court with us. And that was fun to watch because they walked into the building with a certain swagger about them. Garnett was the king of swag. I mean, he just really handled it. So he was like an art form to watch him work. He told you where to sit in the plane. He told everybody what to do every time. He just managed every situation. And Michael managed him crazy, but, they got the championship and Perkins hadn't gotten hurt, probably would have gotten two. Back-to-back that year.
Wow. So do you think that other teams don't look forward to playing in at the Garden?
No, they don't want to. Well, they look forward to it because they can see all these banners hanging up top and they say, well, this is kind of unusual. This isn't like the team in the building, say, in Oklahoma City. It'd be very different.
Okay? Right.
Because the cow show just left, or the rodeo just left.
Right.
And the horses are still parked outside and you're trying to go in. It's true. Yeah, I think they do. People do look at it as a tough out to come here. Mm-hmm. And again, when the crowd gets going in that building, I mean, you can feel it shake. I mean, they know.
Absolutely.
And they know how to put those things there. The noise meter that they put up on the screen. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hokey, but it works.
Yes.
And it gets real loud in there. And you can see these guys coming out of huddle and they're kind of looking around saying, what's going on here? We missed something. And it's like, no, it's
no,
you.
That's
it's
just
you.
Us. That's how we are.
Celtics are going to try to get close to the final shot, about a 2.5 second difference. They got it in Pierce's hand. Harrington talking to Pierce. And Joe DeRosa telling him to shut up. Pierce.
I want to talk about Paul Pierce. You said that we could get back to that. Tell us about your fondness for him and why that is.
Because I got a chance to watch him grow as from a boy to a man and to have some responsibility in life. I saw him nearly get killed by a stabbing. So he's been through a lot, and he's come out the other side pretty well. We had a little thing going on. When the players came out for the lineups, and it would go to layup drills, the first time Paul would go all the way through the drill. Second time he'd come around, and he'd come right up to me and give me a big hug. Okay. And then he'd go. And people used to say, that's really great to see the camaraderie between you and Paul, and it's wonderful. And what they didn't know is I was just saying to Paul, he'd give me the hug, and I'd go, redhead guy's name is John, the black guy is Bill, and some of the three officials. And then he'd go around the court and go, John, how you doing? What's happening? So that was our little thing. In fact, when Paul had his number retired in Boston, I was emceeing it. And when I introduced him, he came walking up to me, put his arms out and said, who we got tonight?
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So I just like Paul. I like him. Ray Allen's a nice kid. I knew Ray from the time he was recruited by the University of Connecticut because of the Big East connection. That was another big help to me because all the good high school players in the country were going to the Big East. And so I'd have done them for 4 years, 3 and 4 years before they even got to the pros. So when I got to the pros, I mean, it's the fifth year I've been watching somebody. So I knew them very well. And that was a big help. Made my job a lot easier.
This is ridiculous.
Call for a personal foul.
That was absolutely ridiculous.
So you mentioned the iconic Tommy Heinsohn, who you worked with for many, many years. Mm-hmm. What is his legacy for you and for all of the Celtics fans?
Run. We have a great tape of him, like Walter McCarty trying to check into a game, and Tommy's like, Walter's like right there, and Tommy's like, run, Walter, run. He was a wonderful man. I tell you how I met Tommy. I'm sitting in a conference room at Channel 12 in Providence, and we had a deal to do 3 Providence College games that year. And we're trying to find a color guy, and I said, why don't we ask Tom Heinsohn? And somebody said, no, he wouldn't be interested. And I said, well, you know how I'm asking. So the guy said, go ahead, you ask him. So I remember going back to him at my office and picking up the phone. This is the old days, no cell phones. And I call the 411 in Boston. I ask the number of Boston Celtics. The phone rings. Somebody picks up the phone. A woman picks up the phone and says, Boston Celtics. And I said, yeah, Tom Heinsohn, please. And there was a pause and she went, you know, Tommy just left. I think he went home. I'll give you his home number. You know, which would never happen today. That would just never, ever happen today. So I call and sure enough, Tommy picks up the phone on the other end. I tell him who I am. He said,
you hadn't met him yet.
No. He said, let's go to lunch. I know a good place is halfway between here and Providence. He takes me to a place that's a mile from his house in 35 in Newton and like 35 miles or 40 miles from Providence. But I sit, we talk. He says he's interested. I had a figure in mind. They told me I could offer him. I offered it. He added a third to it. And he said, if you can get that for me, I'll do it. I said, okay, I'll see what I can. I went to leave. He said, do you have any life insurance? I said, why? He said, do you have any life insurance? Sit down, back down. I ended up getting life insurance with lunch.
I love it.
But I got
it.
Tommy, and that was
That's
the key.
That's amazing.
So we did the three games for Boston, and there was a group called Prism who came from Philadelphia, and they came in about the cable rights for the Celtics, which were up for grabs, and they hired Tommy right away. And they were hired Bob Lobel, and they go Mike, all the Boston guys were in the running, supposedly. And Tommy told me, he said, I got this guy in Providence. I like him. He's a good kid. You should hire him. So they did. And I worked the first 15 years on one-year contracts each year.
So that's how you ended up in Boston.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I didn't know that story. Wow. That's amazing. And look where we are. Now you're going to pass the baton.
Yep.
And you and Drew have been working together this year.
Mm-hmm.
What's your advice for Drew? What would you tell him as you pass the baton officially to him for next year?
Slow down. He's never really done 82 games of one team. He's bounced around and done a lot of games at ESPN, and he's a very talented kid. He can do a lot of different sports. So today has him, he's doing arena football, I think, this week. But it's different when you're one team. You're going to the same audience 82 times. And nobody is not watching. Nobody stumbles on the Celtics in this world of cable that we live in. We have 100 different alternatives. You go to watch the Celtics because that's what you want to do that night. So you don't need me telling you that Paul Pierce got three brothers and two sisters and he got this lit, which is what they teach you at ESPN at Syracuse, which is like ESPN's little feeder system. But they teach you how to write all this stuff down and then jam it into the game no matter what. And Tommy's idea, after he ripped up my notes one night earlier in our career and threw them off the balcony, and said he did. And he just said to me, he said, Michael, we're going to talk about what happens right out there. That's all. And that's what I've been doing ever since. I don't sound like the other guys on the air. I know that. But that's okay.
Yeah.
I'm leaving, so it's all right now.
I think we appreciate that, though. We want to know your thoughts on the game. And we're gonna miss that. But we know you're on to other things. And we wish you all the best in where the future brings you, and thank you for four extraordinary decades here with our beloved Boston Celtics. So,
thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Mike Gorman, thank you for joining us today on Boston Found.
Hi, Mike Gorman, along with Tom Heinsohn. Welcome to our coverage of basketball playoff style with the Boston Celtics.
Looking to find more Boston stories? Go to meetboston.com and don't forget to share and subscribe to the Boston Found podcast.
This podcast was produced by Mudhouse Media.